Hello and welcome to the Legacy Hour podcast, where we learn from powerhouse entrepreneurs on how they intentionally built their business to leave legacies not only to their customers and employees, but also to their communities and families. I'm your host, Victoria McClossage, and I've got one question for you. We all leave a legacy, good or bad. What will yours be? On today's episode, Taylor Treacy, founder of the Virago Project, takes us through her career in volleyball, which led her to a Division I scholarship to the University of North Carolina, where she played as an outside hitter, eventually earning the coveted role of co-captain and was named All-American. But those on the outside didn't know she was struggling heavily with an eating disorder and barely managing through the comparison game that athletes know all too well. Once she graduated and was out from the pressure of the spotlight, she was determined to make sure other women didn't have to suffer from the same things she did. This year, she launched the Virago Project with the sole mission to help female athletes of all shapes and sports balance sport with life. Not surprisingly, her social media blew up and she has garnered a steady following with like-minded women. So without further ado, Taylor Treacy. Taylor, take us back to young Taylor. When did you start volleyball? When did you go from it being really kind of just an after school activity to it being really competitive?
Yeah, it's funny you say young Taylor because I'm still young. I'm 26 years old. So I feel like, you know, I'm still trying to figure out my life and entrepreneurship at the same time. But to answer your question, I started volleyball in the seventh grade, which is kind of considered late these days because, I mean, you see so many parents starting their kids off in sport from the time that they can walk now. Just because the sport industry has boomed so much and, you know, kids are getting scholarships left and right to go to college. So, the parents are really jumping in on that opportunity and starting them early. But I got started in middle school and, at first it was something that, you know, I was just kind of doing for fun. No one in my family was an athlete, or did sports seriously. So I was not very aware of the opportunities that sport could bring me. But, you know, I was tall and apparently athletic and somehow good at what I did, despite not having a very formal coaching background and, you know, history in volleyball. And by the time I was in ninth grade, I had several college offers, ended up taking one from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And I was the first to commit in that recruiting class, which was 2012. That was my freshman year in college. And yeah, I played for 4 years at Carolina and then played professionally after that. Retired in 2018, went to grad school, and then moved into the real world. So yes, I'm still young.
I love that. Well, take me back to high school. So you commit early in your high school career, which means you have 4 years, additional years that other athletes necessarily wouldn't have because they maybe don't commit until junior year. So you're in the spotlight for really an additional 4 years. What was the pressure like in high school? Did you have any access to help, knowing that your parents didn't go through that themselves?
Yeah, I mean, I think high school was, it was an interesting time because even though I committed earlier, I feel like in a way that took a lot of pressure off of me. Just because, I mean, the recruiting process, and you're an athlete, so you can probably attest to this, but the recruiting process is known for being so just like trying and stressful. And a lot of athletes, you know, it'll be until their senior year and then they find out where they're going to go. And that can just like take a really big mental toll on someone, especially if you are like gung ho and like set on playing a sport in college. So I was definitely fortunate in the fact that, you know, I knew that I just had to focus on school, keep my grades up, and, you know, well, SATs were probably the most stressful point for me in high school. But, you know, I knew where I was going to school. So in a way, like there was this really huge load taken off of me as a high school student.
Interesting. I would have never considered that. I mean, I didn't select my school until my senior year. And, you know, my practice schedule, I was up at 5:30 in the morning for morning practice, went to school for 6+ hours, got out, did weightlifting, went to work out again with my team. So it was a very strenuous, and that was just one sport, and I did 3 throughout the year. So I, wow. I definitely relate to some other athletes in the pressure cooker situation of always having to be on. And you are about 5 years behind me. So I didn't really experience social media very much in high school. Facebook was still a college thing. MySpace was just about the only thing around. So I think you might have had a different experience. Was social something high pressure in high school back then? Did you have to deal with that at all?
There is a little bit of pressure from social media, but not nearly as much in high school as there was in college. So I think I remember it was like around 2011, 2012 was when Instagram like really became a thing that like everyone used. And before that there was, you know, there was MySpace and Facebook, maybe Twitter. Twitter was really big in high school once. Like everyone would like subtweet each other. Back in the day, like people would just tweet about their lives like randomly. So that was high school. But yeah, not a ton of pressure on social media in high school, but college for sure. That's when Instagram was a thing and sort of that comparison trap we all can relate to today. Definitely, I found myself in a few times.
Did you find that there was a huge increase in pressure or eyeballs on you when you were in college compared to high school? And what was that like mentally and emotionally?
Yeah, I would definitely say so. Like when you're a college athlete, I mean, everything is out there. And especially, I mean, I played at a Division I school in the Power Five Conference. And our team was good. We were top 15 in the nation most of the time that I was there. So we were really playing against the best in the country. And so, I mean, your name gets out there. There's a lot of people looking at you and expecting things from you. Social media just kind of enhanced that. And so, yeah, I think that the pressure that athletes feel today, like at any level, it's definitely amplified and more intense just due to the nature of this kind of social networking that we have now. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would definitely say like in college, I felt the pressure, the heat was there.
Yeah, I would have to agree. College, especially just from a media standpoint or the social scene and trying to be somewhat normal in the college experience, but still realize that you're there for a job was a very interesting dynamic. You know, you had dry seasons where alcohol wasn't allowed and you had definitely high pressure situations where even in school, where school should be number one priority, it definitely went to the background and it was just get the stuff done. So it's an interesting experience to go through college as an athlete.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm curious, like, how did you find yourself like dealing with that? Like, were you okay? Or did you feel like the pressure got to you sometimes?
It definitely got to me. I had a unique experience where I had a scholarship to a school out in California. I went to go visit the coach, loved him, came back super excited, got a call a couple weeks later from a new coach saying, your old coach is now the national coach, so you've got to come out and meet me. My whole family flew back out. We showed up on the pool deck and nobody was there. And we saw this random gentleman walking around the pool deck and we said, you know, sir, we've flown out here from Florida. You know, we're supposed to meet the head coach. Oh, that's me. I didn't realize we had an appointment. Sorry, we can't offer you a scholarship. We're giving all the money to the boys team.
What? Yes. Oh my gosh.
So that, yeah, it kind of rocked my world because I had worked so hard since sixth grade knowing that I wanted to play in college. I had done the whole Junior Olympics, national team, the whole nine. Mm-hmm. And for that to have been my experience and then to realize that I had already turned down all the other schools that I could have gone to and they had already filled their roster. So I came home and had to pivot. And the day I came home, my mom said, hey, there's a letter for you on my desk. So I went and I grabbed it. And I really didn't apply to any Florida schools because I had my heart set on California where water polo is really played like Little League baseball. Yeah. And it was my acceptance letter to the University of Florida, which at the time and is still one of the hardest Florida schools to get into. And I have no idea how I got in. Honestly, it had to have been an act of God. I wasn't a, you know, I was a good academic student, but I wasn't on par with the crazy SAT scores they were getting. And mm-hmm. the next day I got a call from one of my best friends who was older than me to say, hey, her parents had just bought a house and they had a room for me if I ever got in. And awesome. It kind of, you could just see God lay that plan perfectly out, close one door and open a brand new one. I got a call from the coach who was at Florida, who I used to actually play club with when I was in middle school, who is now the head coach at University of Florida. And mm-hmm. so it just all really worked out. And the pressure in college was an interesting one because I was going through a journey of, I had been so much in a bubble growing up in high school, in my very small private school setting. So I was going through a lot in college, not even just as an athlete that I mentally had to work through. I had had my first panic attack in college, was dealing with some crazy anxiety. It's not something that I think my family had ever experienced. So their, response was just work out more. You'll get over it. You'll be fine.
Wow.
I had to find some friends who had dealt with anxiety, who had told me their experience, you know, heart racing, feeling like you have a heart attack, your hair feels like it's on fire. And for them to describe it to me before I realized, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I'm having. What is it? Oh, it's anxiety, mm-hmm. which felt almost like a cop-out. Like there's no way it could just be anxiety.
Really?
Yeah, but it was absolutely panic attacks and anxiety. I mean, I went through a whole, I made my mom take me to an MRI and an MRA and a CAT scan and every test imaginable under the sun because I swore I was dying. But at the end of the day, it was anxiety and it was something that I had to learn breathing exercises through and to learn that I need to definitely take care of myself. So that was a long-winded way to answer your question. But I definitely had pressure in college, definitely had it in high school. But I do look back on the experience as a positive one in the sense that I learned about my boundaries of how much I can push myself, mm-hmm. what mental health is, and that it is something that, you know, we go to the doctor for our bodies. Why would we not go for our brains?
Exactly.
And so I so connected with the mission of the Virago Project, which I'd love to get into. So tell me about, you know, you have a stellar career at UNC. You start to go pro after. How did the Virago Project come to be? What was the kickoff to that? And what was that like when you got started?
Yeah. So what I didn't mention beforehand was that, so you know, things were pretty smooth in high school, but when I got to college, that's really when the pressure started kicking in, especially my junior and my senior. And then I redshirted, which means that I had an extra semester to be on campus and, you know, one more semester to play. So my junior, my senior, and my super senior years were just very heavy on me. There's a lot of responsibility with being an upperclassman. And mental health generally in athletics, it's just not something that's really talked about. I think that a lot of the time athletes take on this kind, this persona, of, you know, being the toughest person in the room, putting the team on their back, showing no weakness. That's, you know, something that is widely stereotyped, amongst athletes everywhere. So yeah, I definitely felt the pressure to kind of have it all together, even during the moment when I was very clearly, like, to myself, breaking down. So I experienced depression in college, even though, you know, on the outside, it looked like I was doing well. I was starting, my team was doing great. Like, everything mm-hmm. looked fine, but I was kind of crumbling on the inside. I also dealt with an eating disorder in college. A lot of that stemmed from some of the comparison traps that I would find myself in on social media. Also just feeling like life was out of control and trying to control something. Mm-hmm. So for me, that was food. And anxiety, like performance anxiety, feeling, you know, like I can't separate my athletic identity from who I am. And so being so wrapped up into who I am as an athlete that, you know, I didn't even stop to think that I should be taking care of Taylor as a person. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So whenever I graduated college and stopped playing volleyball there, I went on to play professionally, and it didn't take long for me. It took until the end of my professional season to realize, like, hey, like, I'm burned out. I'm not coming back. I'm going to go to grad school. I'm going to get my master's, and then, you know, figure out what's next. So I was in England getting my master's in events management. It was always my dream. So I was sport administration undergrad. So I always knew that I wanted to work in sport. And while I was in school, I, you know, took a lot of internships doing events on campus with, like, Special Olympics and UNC's operations team. So I thought that I would marry sports and events by doing, like, game day operations for an athletic department mm-hmm. at a college or university. And when I was there in grad school, I realized that, you know, there was a whole different side of me in terms of my mental health that I just hadn't explored. And I started thinking, okay, well, how can I bring events and this, like, newfound passion that I have for mental health as it pertains to me and, like, other sports women and, like, athletics together? And then I was like, oh, I know, like, one day I will start a business that has mental health focused events specifically for female athletes. Boom. And so I was like, what am I going to name it? And so that took, like, 3 months for me to find the name.
You have to tell us, how did you come up with the name Virago Project?
Yeah. So at first the Virago Project was going to be called Wonder Girl. Because, you know, like, there's this whole thing of, like, Wonder Woman, you know, she's, like, a strong, she has woman, she has muscles, all of that. And the idea was, like, okay, we're going to get these sports women to, like, think outside the box, to think outside of sports. And consequently, that's going to help them with their mental health and, like, self-care. Because I truly believe that, like, creativity and fostering your hobbies and passions will just, you know, feed your soul. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, I was like, yeah, Wonder Girl, great. And then I brought this name and this, like, business proposal to one of my professors in grad school. And they were like, yeah, that's going to get copyright flagged because, like, Marvel, like, you know, the big
exactly.
house has a Wonder Girl. So you can't do that. And I was like, oh, shit, like, now what? And so I was just looking for names everywhere, and I came across Virago, which is an ancient Greek term for a female warrior. And I was like, yep, that's the one. People may not understand how to pronounce it at first, but I'm going to make them pronounce it correctly with good marketing. So.
No, I love it. I think that it is a perfect way to encompass the spirit of a female athlete, because there are certainly times where, as an athlete, you feel like a warrior. You are heading into battle. You have got to give yourself some pep talks right before that buzzer sounds, or at least we have a buzzer in water polo. I don't know that you guys have a whistle.
So I
loved that, because I certainly have never felt more like a warrior than when I've started a water polo game or when I gave birth. North. So those are my two warrior moments. So I love that.
That's really cool. Yeah. I'm glad that it resonates with you then, because it sounds like you've had some warrior woman moments in your life.
Yes. And I'm proud of them. And I wish more women would talk about them. I think that, there's something about being humble and kind, and I don't take that away from what we should be. But I also think that in order to inspire and serve other female athletes and female entrepreneurs and business owners, we have to be proud of our warrior moments and talk about them. So tell me about what the Virago Project does from a mission standpoint. Are you guys starting out just content? What's your beginning stages look like?
Yeah, so we really are in our beginning stages right now. I mean, I've had this idea since 2018, but I've really just started to truly pour into it in the last year or so. So our mission is to help female athletes balance sport with life. We're a nonprofit, so we've got to keep it broad, right, so that we can be able to help in different ways. So for us, we help athletes by educating them and inspiring them through our content on our blog, which our Instagram page is really our blog. That's where we basically just give free mini lessons in mental health and well-being, and giving sportswomen stress coping techniques, all for free, right on our Instagram account. All of the stuff that we wish that we had seen when we were in the grind, and I'm sure you wish you would have saw when you were playing water polo at UF. So that's what our first kind of layer of support is, that we can provide to sportswomen. Our second layer that we've been doing a lot more recently is just talking to teams. So I'll go in front of different colleges and universities, high school teams, even club teams, and allow them to tailor what we call a team talk. And so, yeah, we'll talk to their girls about mindset or mental health, kind of just dive deeper into those stress management techniques.
Do you feel like they are dealing with similar pressures that we went through, you know, a decade ago? Do you feel like it's different? What are you hearing from the female college athlete today in those talks?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it, I mean, I can relate to everything that's been brought up so far. The younger girls, I think, are more concerned about, you know, like recruiting and how do I get a coach to notice me and how do I recover after making a mistake in a game? I think that they feel a lot of pressure and stress, like on just being a good athlete, and they're still learning how to manage performance anxiety and just their game in general. So there's that. And then the older girls are more interested in these conceptual ideas of mental health and how can I take care of myself and how can I stop comparing myself to others and what do I do if I have a negative body image. So yeah, I think it's all, you know, something that we've all dealt with as women and as athletes.
Absolutely. For sure. So you had talked about performance anxiety, and I definitely felt that as an athlete. I was responsible for shooting, and so my actions won games. And I am curious, because I've taken a lot of what I learned as an athlete, the pep talks, into my personal career that has nothing to do with sports. I mean, even before every podcast episode, right, I'm talking to myself, I'm giving myself the good positive self-talk, what I want to accomplish, what's my goal, what's the vision. And so how can you share with our listeners who may or may not be an athlete, but performance anxiety stems not only from an athlete's perspective, but also into everyday work life.
Yeah.
What are some steps that we can take as entrepreneurs or business owners or even still athletes that are listening to help reduce that performance anxiety?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I feel like, well, first, let me just say this. I still don't have it all figured out. Like, I feel pressure, you know, before I release a blog post or before I talk to teams. And a lot of that, I think, stems from, one, probably this like embedded feeling that, you know, who am I to even show up. Mm-hmm. Like
imposter syndrome.
Yeah. Yep. It's especially with entrepreneurs, like, oh my gosh. But, yeah, like I get that all the time, even though I was literally in those girls' shoes like 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I was a captain on my team and a mentor to all of the freshmen on my team. And now like that I've created this business and this brand where other coaches from different teams want me to, you know, encourage and inspire their girls. All of a sudden I feel like, oh my gosh, who am I? You know, like mm-hmm. I get that way sometimes. Before I go into those situations, even though I know that, you know, I have the background and the heart to share the message that I want to share and that it's important. So I would say one, just like believing in yourself in general, like believing in what you're doing. I would say like as an athlete, if you put in the hours and if you train and you're prepared and you go into a game, like you can fall back on your training. You can trust your training mm-hmm. and you don't have to think so much. And I feel the same way as an entrepreneur. Like as long as I'm doing the things that I need to do, like preparing and, you know, I know if I'm slacking off and mm-hmm. I'll take that L, you know, mm-hmm. I can be real with myself, whatever. But if I'm showing up every single day and putting in the work, then like, I don't feel like I should have a real reason to feel like I can't deliver on the things that I want to deliver on. So yeah, just believing in yourself is probably the number one point I would say to get over that performance anxiety.
I appreciate that. Yeah. In my lead up to launching this podcast, I've worked with a coach who said to me, what if you are created for something that hasn't been created yet? And that was so powerful to me because it gave me the freedom to do it exactly how I wanted and not to look for a template that I could follow. And yeah. It helped me not have to compete with any other podcaster, which, you know, there's millions now. I appreciated that freedom because I think as an athlete, you're constantly compared to another teammate, another team. And yeah. So that pressure to always perform on cue every single time can be immense.
Mm-hmm.
So you talked about how that led into depression and an eating disorder. How did that manifest? Do your teammates notice? Did somebody come talk to you? Were you able to self-heal? What was that process like?
Yeah. So I think that people noticed, the people who were close to me. The people who weren't close to me, though, it was kind of twisted. Like, I mean, and this isn't to say anything on them. Like, they don't, you know, they weren't trying to do or say anything wrong. But when I was going through the meat of my eating disorder and lost a good amount of weight and just, you know, I'm already tall and like pretty lean. I'm 6'1" and have an athletic build. So when I lose weight, it's just like, okay, you didn't need to lose any weight. Mm-hmm. But people would say like, wow, you look great. And like, oh, you should model and stuff like that.
Affirmation.
And like make, yeah. And they had no idea that like I was sick. And so there was that. So people noticed. They either noticed in that way or the people who were close to me noticed. And they would say, like, are you okay? But that was really it. Like my coach has asked a few times, like, are you okay? Whatever. But I think like they were kind of afraid to push more. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like when it comes to like eating disorders and any kind of mental health disorder, it can be a disease of like denial. Mm. Especially with eating disorders, like you don't want to admit to yourself that you need help. And there's this, again, this is probably the athlete mentality, but you know, I can do it all on my own. Like I'll get help when, like if I really need to, but mm-hmm. I can probably handle this myself. There was that. And so when I really decided to like admit to myself, like, yep, I have an issue and this needs to be addressed. I was out of college actually, and I was in England and I didn't have access to the normal healthcare that I would normally have access to in the States. So I did have to kind of heal myself up and do a lot of research and educate myself on, you know, like eating disorder recovery and self-care and, you know, depression and all of that. And then eventually when I got back to the States, I did end up going to therapy, but it was a long road for sure.
Good for you. Is there anything that your parents, your best friend, your coach could have said to you during college that could have helped you get to that bottom quicker? And I say that not to say I hope they would have done something terrible, but is there anything that would have kind of shaken you up to realize that you could have made a change sooner?
I think that maybe from like my coaches and teammates, I don't know, like I had such a big ego in college. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like, and my coaches said this before, like I always hated asking for help. And that's like one of the like reoccurring lessons in my life that I have to learn over and over again. Like it's okay to ask for help. But that was very much my personality in college. And I'm not sure that if anyone had said like straight up, like, oh, you need to go talk to a sports nutritionist or dietitian or whatever, that I would have taken that well. I think that because kids my age when I was six are constantly scrolling on social media, there really is something to be said for these influencers and these like accounts and brands talking about these issues and spreading awareness in that way. I think it like empowers athletes to make it more of a conversation. Like if it was a larger conversation at the school and not like a small conversation that I was having with a teammate or a coach while I was all going through it, then I feel like I would have been more inclined to go get help. But because I felt like literally I was the only person going through it, and I didn't want to be like singled out or, you know, I didn't want to be that first one. I don't think it would have made a difference if, you know, what they said to me, because no one else was talking about it.
Yeah. There's definitely some safety and security to knowing you're not the only one. And it's funny because when you were talking, it triggered my memory of being, I had to have been in, you know, elementary school, third or fourth grade, and I was never a tiny girl. And I was always athletic. And I think that's how my mom kept me in somewhat of a shape, because I probably would have eaten a whole lot more. But I remember vividly, it was kickball game and they were picking teams. And, you know, typically all of the girls got picked at the end because the boys wanted to stack their team. And I remember being the first pick. And I just remember the boys all sniggering because it's something that I should have been proud of at the moment, right? I was the best athlete that a person could pick. Yeah. I was so ashamed. Like I just wanted to run away. And it was something that I wasn't the tiniest girl. I wasn't the girly one. And so I just struggled from a young age being okay with having an athletic build. And even today, you know, I will not, my body shape is not to be super thin. And yeah. I am even in my young 30s, finally accepting after 30 years that my body was built a certain way and the goal is to be healthy, not to be thin.
Yes.
And so especially coming out of college where you're no longer fed the proper food and you're no longer in workouts day in and day out and somebody telling you what to do, I had to figure out how can I maintain a healthy lifestyle without it being part of my required job at the time. So there was just a lot of learning. And I'm so with you on the realizing that I'm not the only one to have ever gone through this. So I appreciate that encouragement. And I have felt such comfort finding other athletes on your Instagram page and realizing that I was built to be a warrior. And I was built to kick ass in games. And I should be really, really proud of that. So thank you for what you're doing at the Virago Project. And I want to transition this into the business part of it, because I think as you and I are also in the earlier stages of building our brands, there's that need to also know that we're not alone in some of these hurdles that we're going through by building businesses. So tell me about the startup process that you've gone through in the Virago Project, the branding, the marketing, filing government papers to be a nonprofit. Did it come easy? I mean, what were the hurdles? What were the successes? Tell me about that process.
Yeah. So not easy. I think number one hurdle was at the beginning, because remember, I got the idea for this in 2018, and just, you know, in the last several months, it's really just picking up momentum. But the number one hurdle I would say at the beginning was just like personal accountability. Mm-hmm. And again, just like believing that I could. I would post something. So my idea for the Virago Project, I like to start with marketing, because I know that when I can find my community, my tribe of sportswomen who really want to learn more about mental health and take care of themselves, that's where I will, you know, convert that relationship that I have with them into sales, whether it's for a mentorship program or a team talk or an event later down the road. So marketing was huge, and I knew that I needed to provide, like my message for free essentially, and put that out there and let my community know what I'd be all about. But it's hard to like put yourself out there by yourself. Mm-hmm. So I would post one thing and, you know, it would be inconsistent. And if I didn't get any feedback on it, I would feel like super embarrassed or like get that imposter syndrome again. Mm-hmm. Like, why am I doing this? Whatever. But then when I started consistently, you know, showing up and just got over it, and I was like, hey, look, like I'm going to post something every single day that's relevant to like the matters that I want to talk about. Mm-hmm. That's when people started pouring in, and, you know, it went from 300 to 13,000 in a matter of weeks.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Just from being consistent and relating and like really connecting every single day. So that was huge, because I really needed to get over the fact that like I was putting myself out there. And then secondly was finding a partner, in the team. I think that just really helped me, because I'm not someone who, is great at all of the small administrative tasks, mm-hmm. like filing for the 501c3. So I brought on a partner. She's our vice president, Emily, who was actually a senior when I was a freshman, and her background is in finance. So,
oh, wow.
And so she, worked at JP Morgan for a long time and basically just helped entrepreneurs open businesses. Most of her work was in like the for-profit business industry. So she would open up LLCs, for her clients, so she's kind of moving into this nonprofit space with me, but she filed all of the paperwork and walked me through it step by step. And her husband's a lawyer, so that helps too.
Dang, you hit the jackpot with that one.
Girl, I mean, like, you got it. I'm like, I can't even front and act like I know how to deal with all of that. You know, like I am pulling my resources together. You have to be resourceful, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can't do this all on your own. So she has been amazing. And just like, we got our 501c3, approved. And she was just like on it. She's been pulling together all of like the stuff for the podcast that we're launching. And then there's another woman I'm working with to create a mentorship program for my alma mater. So it's just like a team. A team is everything to me.
It's how you win the games, isn't it?
Yeah. And I played team sports. So, hey,
I hear you. Do you have one of those pieces of advice that you got early on that you're like, nah, I'm not going to take that, and you regret it now?
No, but I do have a piece of advice that I got early on that was like, nah, I'm not going to take it. And I'm happy I didn't.
Okay. So what's that?
I can share that one with you. Yeah. I was in grad school once, and, there was someone in my program, and we were going through some branding, lessons. And we were all like talking about branding just conceptually and like best practices, whatever. And this guy was saying, you know, no one wants a slasher. Have you ever heard that term?
No. Like
a slasher. So a slasher is someone who doesn't just do or specialize in one like field or like topic within that field. They are someone who, you know, starts a business maybe in like public speaking and also starts a business in like event planning, for example. And also like is a private consultant or whatever. Like they're slashers, you know, they do a lot of different things. And when he said that, I heard that, I was like, wait a second, like, but I want to work in sport and I also want to do mental health. And I also want to bring like events together. Like I am a slasher and you're sitting here telling me that no one wants a slasher. I don't want to say the F word, but I was like, F you, like get this idea away from me. And so, yeah, that's probably the worst advice I ever heard, because I think that there's just, you know, everyone's so unique and like the qualities that you bring to the table are, you know, I mean, there could be so many different parts of you that you can marry to build a great product or a great business. So I don't like limiting myself or putting myself in a box or being someone who doesn't slash. I love the slash.
That's a new term. I've never heard of it. Yeah, that's an interesting idea, only because I have to imagine that most entrepreneurs are similar to us in the way that we're always thinking of new ideas. And so it's really just taking one of those and making it successful. And a lot of times they go on to their second life and create a new product or a new brand or business. So that's an interesting idea that he had. I definitely also do not agree with it, but I do think that there is some truth to buckling down and taking one of those ideas and sticking with it and being consistent to your earlier message and not letting that imposter syndrome get in the way. Yeah. So one of the things we talk about on this podcast is money. I wish more people talked about it. It's unfortunately, I think an older generation once said, you don't talk about religion, politics, or money. But I think it's something that, especially as a entrepreneur, money is something that we should talk about and not feel alone in thinking about. So were you financially prepared to take on the Virago project? Did you have to fundraise? What does it look like today? Tell us that journey.
Yeah. So we are in startup mode. We just started releasing products like our team talks and our mentorship program and offering those to athletes and coaches. So we're really just kind of like dipping our toes in the water and navigating, you know, where to set our price points and, you know, best practices for reaching out and getting clients and stuff like that. So this is really new territory. But in terms of starting up, I actually left my corporate job. So I live in DC. I live in Washington, DC. And when I first moved here, I came here for a job for a trade association, and I was an event planner. It was a great first job, you know, checked all of the P's and Q's or whatever, but it wasn't fulfilling to me. And I knew that eventually this is what I would want to do. And I wasn't able to save a ton of money here in DC on that salary just because DC is so expensive. So I actually left that job and became a live-in nanny for an entire year. I saved upwards of 12 grand.
Off
strategically so that I could take time off to pour into this project. Back in March, I left my job as a nanny and haven't really looked back. And, you know, we're just starting to, create revenue from our team talks and from our programs, but momentum is picking up and I'm hoping that it will, sustain me, you know, so that I don't have to get another full-time job in the future. That's the goal.
So what was your idea on run rate for that $12,000? What were you, or how long were you hoping to make that last?
It can last. So if I'm working part-time outside of the Virago project, it can last anywhere between 6 and 8 months.
Okay.
So yeah, that's a good amount of time for me.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you go about pricing, or at least starting to price the team talks? Obviously, you don't want to go too high and totally scare them off, but there's, yep, you don't want to leave any money on the table. So how do you go about that negotiation conversation?
Yeah, so I always, you know, there's a flat rate for a 1 hour team talk on Zoom, but then I offer more ongoing services too. So like if a team wants to check in 3 or 4 times throughout their season, we can make that happen too at a different price point. So I think that giving options is always good. And then, you know, if it's a team who has experienced budget cuts, for example, due to COVID or whatever, I'm happy to tailor it. You know, if that's necessary. For me, it's a lot about relationships. I don't want this to be an I'm in and then I'm out kind mm-hmm. of transaction. I would like to, after the team talk, maybe come back to them in a few months and be like, hey, like, we're starting this mentorship program. We'll take care of everything for you. And if they have a good experience and trust me, then I know that they'll be more likely to do that. And then after the mentorship program, when COVID stops, you know, destroying all of our plans, I can come back and say, hey, like, we'd love to take your team out on a team bonding retreat. Like, what do you think? So it's really more just about like a long-term relationship for me. And I'm happy to negotiate on price if that's what's needed now.
Yeah, it'd be cool. Of course, as soon as you start throwing out ideas, my brain doesn't stop because brainstorming is my jam. So it would be really cool if you could almost create like a speakers bureau within the Virago Project and get some high-level athletes on there so that it's not just you going out, but you can lend some of the bigger names out to the teams and just take a cut from it.
Yeah, yeah, that would be something very awesome. And that's a great idea. I'm going to write that down.
Well, perfect. So far, you're a couple months in, you've created a great Instagram page. You've really stepped up your following. I mean, that's a really fast uptick, and I can only imagine it's going to get better. What are you most proud of so far?
I think I'm most proud of the fact that I guess that, you know, what I'm putting out there is needed. I think the fact that it's relatable, I'll have girls reach out and say, hey, this is so relatable. Like, this is exactly what I'm going through. I wish more people would talk about it. Like, please keep pushing content out and let me know how I can get involved. That's something to be proud of, that what I'm doing is actually of service to other sports women.
For sure. I mean, I've only known the Virago Project for about 4 weeks. Margie Garland put me on to you, and I've been taking in the content, and it has, even I'm not a current athlete, but it's as a person who has an athletic mindset, it's helped me just in my day-to-day life. So I'm grateful for that. These last couple questions are on average the same to every guest. So we start pretty fluffy, but I really do enjoy this question. And that's, tell me about some of your current favorite things. They don't have to be anything Virago Project related. It can be something as simple as your favorite new book, favorite restaurant, project management tool that you're loving.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So my favorite new thing is, one, my new iPhone. I don't mean to sound like a tech snoot because I'm totally not, but I had an iPhone 6 and I upgraded to the 11 Pro recently, and gosh, I just love it. It takes such good pictures, and life is just so much easier, especially like if you're, you know, running a business from your phone. So very happy with this purchase. And then the weather is getting nicer in DC. It's mm-hmm. a little bit cooler. So fall's around the corner, and I'm excited for that.
That's awesome. Yeah. Weather down here in South Florida is a easy breezy 100 with a 100% chance of humidity. So it's not the most glorious thing.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah. It's not somewhere you want to go outside right now.
Yeah, I can imagine.
All right. So the second to last question is, if you could go back and tell your younger self, whether that's 12-year-old Taylor when you first started volleyball, whether that's high school or college Taylor, what do you wish you could tell yourself at that age?
Yeah, I think I would just tell myself in college, especially, I would just tell myself to enjoy the ride and to continue to foster those unique little characteristics that make me me, and not just give 110% always to volleyball. I mm-hmm. think that's the biggest lesson that I learned. So, yeah.
That's a good one. Mm-hmm. All right. Last question. My favorite question. In 20, 30, 50 years, when we look back and we look at Taylor Treacy and the Virago Project, what will they say about you?
Well, from the business standpoint, I would love for people to say, yes, that's the go-to mental health organization for all women in sport. That's the legacy that I would like to have. And then when they talk about their founder, Taylor, I just hope they say that she was relatable and she worked hard for all of us. And, you know, we cared about her and we know that she cared about us.
I love that. That's perfect. Well, thank you, Taylor. I am so grateful for your time today. It has been a wonderful conversation, a conversation that I think women and men will have a great relatability to, especially if you've been in sports. So thank you, Taylor, for your time, and we will talk soon.
Yeah, thanks so much, Victoria. Much appreciated. This was fun, and good luck.
Hey guys, Victoria here. I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you'd like more episode details, head on over to victoriamclausage.com for show notes and info on today's guest. Oh, and don't forget, make sure to nominate a business or guest you'd like to hear on the next episode of The Legacy Hour.